In the shadowy world where vampires, witches, and demons walk among us, Phoebe Taylor stands at the threshold of eternity. Her transformation begins with a farewell dinner in Paris, her last meal as a human. Despite her diplomatic family's concerns and her father's final plea to reconsider, Phoebe's mind is set. She craves not just her fiancé Marcus's love, but the vampire's unhurried relationship with time itself. No act of creation has ever been painless, Phoebe insists when offered anesthesia. Miracles should leave a mark, so we remember how precious they are. When the moment arrives, she experiences sharp sensation, numbness, tingling as Miriam bites her. She awakens to searing cold and internal burning before her maker offers a blood-wet wrist, asking her to choose between life and death. Drawn to the scent of copper and iron, salt and sweet, Phoebe reverently kisses the wrist before whispering life and taking her first taste of vampire blood. As the powerful substance surges through her, her heart begins a new, deliberate rhythm that sings, "I am, not, and yet, now, evermore." This intimate portrayal of transformation stands in stark contrast to romanticized versions in popular culture. Here, becoming a vampire isn't simply a bite and awakening. It's a profound rebirth, requiring conscious choice, preparation, and acceptance of the pain that comes with radical change. In 1757, Massachusetts, Marcus McNeil suffers under an abusive father amid revolutionary fervor. By 1775, he joins the colonial militia, killing a British soldier at Breed's Hill. After self-inoculating against smallpox to join the Continental Army, he finds purpose in Thomas Paine's writings. Marcus flees south as Galen Chauncey after shooting his father to protect his family. After Yorktown in 1781, Matthew de Clermont offers Marcus transformation into a vampire. The transition overwhelms his senses as Matthew explains, "You're aware now. All you need to survive is blood." Marcus discovers his broken arms heal instantly and experiences an intoxicating first feeding. When Matthew brings him to see his former home through new eyes, Marcus realizes he no longer belongs there and turns away from his past. Isn't it fascinating how our most profound transformations often come when we're already fighting for something larger than ourselves? Imagine seeing thousands of subtle color variations and feeling music replace the blood in your veins. This is Phoebe's new reality. Her enhanced senses reveal the night as a thousand textures of darkness. Freysia and Miriam carefully control her environment, locked windows against alluring scents, limited light, and timed baths to prevent sensory overwhelm. By her 15th day, Phoebe experiences overwhelming sensuality. Francoise explains this insatiable lust signals readiness for human blood. Vampires are nothing but desire. When Phoebe feeds from a human volunteer, the experience is intoxicating, far more intense than drinking from a glass. Her evolved sense of smell classifies scents into taste categories, revealing flavors without biting. Yet immortality demands payment. Phoebe's once sharp memory grows fragmented. "You have too many memories now for one brain to hold," Francoise explains. This troubles Phoebe, who worries about returning to her art. Immortality traded for constant hunger and fractured memory. "A true father has nothing to do with vampires or biology," Marcus reflects. "A true father teaches what you need to know about the world and how to survive in it." The theme of fatherhood, both biological and chosen, runs throughout the narrative. Marcus killed his abusive biological father Obadiah to protect his family, while his relationship with Matthew de Clermont as his vampire father is complex but nurturing. In early 19th century New Orleans, Marcus creates his own vampire children, beginning with his friend Ransom and growing to a diverse family of two dozen. When yellow fever strikes, Matthew arrives with a devastating edict: there will be no more children. After Marcus's vampire children are systematically killed, he vows never to forgive Matthew. This history parallels Diana and Matthew raising their magical children. When Rebecca bites Matthew, triggering his blood rage, the family faces pressure to spellbind the children. Diana refuses, having endured that trauma herself. I won't tie up my children. The cycle of protection through control versus freedom through risk persists across generations. The American and French revolutions provide both historical context and metaphor for the tension between liberty and restraint in vampire existence. Marcus's life was shaped by revolutionary ideals. In 1789, he shelters radical journalist Jean-Paul Marat despite Matthew's warnings. When Philippe learns of Marat's plans to massacre aristocrats, he sends Marcus to Edinburgh for safety. When Marcus burns Marat's manuscript, his lover, Veronique, retrieves it from the flames, burning her hands and rejecting his help, claiming he chose the Déclamants over her. This history illuminates the central tension for vampires, balancing freedom with restraint. As immortal beings with tremendous power, vampires must exercise constant self-control, a necessary restraint that often feels imprisoning to newly turned vampires like Marcus and Phoebe. Freya advises Phoebe, "You cannot save the world or everyone in it, but you must find a way to make a difference. True freedom comes not from unlimited choice, but from meaningful purpose." What does accumulating centuries of memories mean for immortal beings? Throughout the narrative, memory functions as both blessing and curse. Diana perceives memories as colored threads distorting time, while Matthew explains that vampire memories aren't chronological, but jumbled experiences. When Phoebe's once sharp memory fragments after becoming a vampire, Francoise explains, "You have too many memories now for one brain to hold. It will get worse the longer you live." For Phoebe, whose identity was built on art expertise, this cognitive shift threatens her sense of self as Freya encourages finding new purpose. The novel suggests immortality requires embracing change rather than preservation. As Yisabeau tells Phoebe, "To be a vampire, you must choose life, your life, not someone else's, over and over again." This wisdom extends beyond vampires. We build identities through personal narratives, and moving forward requires revising these stories to incorporate both painful and beautiful formative experiences. After their 90-day separation, Phoebe and Marcus reunite in timeless lovemaking. At her climax, Marcus guides her to bite his chest, his blood carrying his thoughts through her. Their hearts beat in unison, answering, "Evermore." Marcus returns to his childhood home in Hadley, preserved by Matthew. With Phoebe beside him, he explores each familiar room, the mustard-yellow kitchen, the parlor with Philippe's blue chair. Despite the property's haunted reputation, Phoebe embraces their new beginning. As they overlook their farm, their blood songs synchronize to the same rhythm, "Evermore." Marcus has come full circle, returning to his roots while creating new memories with Phoebe. Their story reveals that transformation integrates our past into who we're becoming rather than erasing it. In a world obsessed with extending life, perhaps the true gift isn't immortality, but presence, existing fully in each moment and loving deeply despite inevitable loss.